Blog Talk Radio.
It's 7 p.m. and all is well. Welcome to the No Chaser Show. I am your co-host, Jerry, a.k.a. JT. The number to call is 347-637-3220. I'm the Robin to the Batman I'm going to bring in. Happens to be Mac Williams, who happens to be the host of this show. So without further ado, the chat room is open. The telephone's been said, and Mac, our guest, is right on cue. I'll give it to you to bring in the guest, and we go from there.
All right. Hey, all you listeners, glad to see you guys join us. I'm really happy to have you guys here. We are ready to start our next show. Just let me say that this guy I'm about to introduce is I consider a very good friend. We don't see each other as much, but we do communicate often. But when we do, it's like picking up right where we left off. A good friend of mine, known him since a while back, long time ago, and I want him to become a friend of the show and somebody that I have on more often. But I just want to introduce the street ball legend, the N1 alum, and my really, really good friend and brother in Christ, my man Grayson Boucher, a.k.a. The Professor. What's up, baby?
What's going on, man? I'm glad to be on.
What's up? Good, man. I'm good. Good.
Good.
I'm glad to have you, man. You know, just jump in wherever you feel. We're going to interview you, but right now I just want to touch a few topics, trying to get through the week here, just talk about a few things real quick, and then we'll get right to you. So, you know, we may say, hey, man, what do you think? And jump right in, man. Feel free, please.
Okay. All right, cool.
First thing I want to talk about, I didn't watch the documentary yesterday on the Dream Team. I heard about it. I was down at the Berry Farms at the game. But I chose not to watch it. And I think one of the reasons why I chose not to watch it is what's starting to come out now, which I kind of already knew about a long time ago, is that Isaiah Thomas wasn't part of that Dream Team. And that kind of really set it for me. On top of that, I'm born and raised in Detroit, so I'm an Isaiah. I'm a big Isaiah supporter. And I think he should have been part of that team, and I think the fact that he wasn't there is a shame. And I think it diminishes that team. Of course, everybody will say it was great, and it was a great team. But it's one of the reasons why, to this day, I respect Michael Jordan and his accomplishments on the court. But I really have to say I've never really liked him since then and even before that. But that kind of put the nail in the coffin for me. But I just wanted to say that, you know, I was happy today to hear that Isaiah Thomas, you know, praised the Dream Team and took the high road. And, you know, I like the things that he said, out, and I don't know if you read it, Fess, or I don't know if you read it, Jerry, what he said, but, you know, he said today that today, like all Americans, I congratulate the Dream Team on their anniversary. I'm proud of my career in the NBA and have fond memories of going head-to-head with all the members of the team. I can't speak for the selection process as I wasn't involved, but 20 years later, their gold medal is still a monumentous achievement. And I just thought that was the high road, taking the high road, you know. So for me, you guys can express whatever you want. I'm done with it, but I mean, I'm glad they accomplished what they accomplished. I think it was a great accomplishment, but at the same time, to not have someone like Isaiah Thomas there and to find out that two guys stood against one guy, I think is petty. I think they're reaping what they sowed, and I think it was horrible because I've held grudges. I don't do that anymore, but I've held grudges against people, but I've never let a grudge make me go against somebody's livelihood or miss an opportunity that is monumental. I just think that was really, really terrible on their part. So that's all I'll say about it. I'll let you guys expound if you want to.
Yeah. Well, I'll give it to the guests first.
Yeah, no, that's interesting to hear, and I think I definitely respect Isaiah for taking the high road on that. I'm curious. One thing I'm curious about is, so since Michael Jordan and one other player were not in favor of Isaiah being on the team, was it because I know that Isaiah and Jordan had had some rifts in the past? Was it because there was like an All-Star game when Isaiah Thomas like froze out Jordan? Was that true?
Yeah, there was that rumor, but that's not where it stems from. The article states where it stems from, and I know where it stems from. What it stems from is Isaiah and when the Pistons walked off the court and wouldn't shake their hands. It's interesting you talk about that because I'm going to tell you the same reason, and it's funny that this all happened now, Fest, because the same reason that everybody criticized KG and Rondo for walking off the court, I knew why KG and Rondo walked off the court. I knew why they didn't shake their hands. Not saying it was the right thing, but I understood. Where it stemmed from was when they walked off the court on Chicago, it left a bad taste in everybody's mouth. So they figured, you know what, we don't want you on the team since you did that, which I thought was kind of petty because, to me, what goes on in a game should have no effect on what you do outside of the game, you know.
Right.
And I just felt like that was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So,
I agree.
Yeah, but remember, what Rondo said earlier in the series with Boston and Miami this year, remember when the lady asked him, she said, what's the biggest change with what you're doing or what have you? She asked him a question, and Rondo said, not playing while they're whining and complaining to the refs.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So the same thing happened with Isaiah in Chicago. What happened, because I know you're not old enough to have seen that, what happened was Isaiah and them had been playing Chicago physical and hard. Back in those days, you played physical. They played more physical and hard than they do now. And they had been beating Michael for like 3 or 4 years. Well, what happened is, when they beat him, that last year when they overcame us and got past us to start going on to the championships they did, when they got past us that year, Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, Pippen, the whole team just about complained about and called us dirty, called Detroit dirty, and said they were dirty players and started this campaign. Just like you heard him do with the Lakers. They start complaining to the league and putting it out in the media that these guys are dirty or that they don't play right, so that the refs will go, it'll go along towards calling it more towards their side. And that's what happened with the Pistons, and Isaiah got so insulted, and the Pistons got insulted, that's why they walked off the court and didn't shake hands with him. That's why they did it, because they were like, if Isaiah said, if we play you the same way for 5 years, don't come in the sixth year and now complain and whine and cry about it because you can't get past us. Make the adjustments and get past us and beat us. And that was what it—that's what it was about.
I got you. Is that why they're called? Is that where the Bad Boys thing started?
Well, it was the Bad Boys things before Chicago. It was because the Pistons had an identity, and their identities, they played physical, hard nosed defense. And their Jordan rules that they called them, or the physical play, was more geared toward Michael and the Chicago Bulls than it was towards probably anybody else. I admit to that. You know.
I got you.
So yeah, that's pretty what that was. Jerry, I don't know if you wanted to expound on that at all, but you know, if you want to, you're free to do that.
Well, no, because I'm not a fan of Isaiah Thomas, so I'd rather not say anything.
No, Jerry, say what you got to say.
Well, let me put it this way. I'm not a fan of Isaiah Thomas at all. I think he's lack of a better word, a brat, in my opinion. This is the straight show, so I'm saying it to you straight.
Right.
And he's a heck of a player, but his attitude has gotten him into a lot of trouble over the years, playing and otherwise. So True, I think it's unfair that he wasn't able to get on the team, but if you look at the team, who would you replace him with? Who would he take the place of?
Christian Laettner.
Okay, my contention is this, and I'm not going to go banter, but I think at the time they wanted to have a one college player on that team for some reason. I don't know why, but I think they wanted to have the opportunity for one college player, which happened to be Christian Laettner at the time, to be on that team. And I think that was probably championed by Mike Krzyzewski because he was, I think he was a coach on that team at the time.
No,
so.
It was actually Chuck Daly.
Chuck Daly, okay. Well, I thought Krzyzewski was an assistant coach or not?
He was an assistant, but right. He was an assistant, but you're right. It wasn't really his mandate. It was the Olympic people's. They wanted a college player. But if Michael Jordan could make a stipulation, which it is true, that he don't be on the team, he wouldn't be on the team if Isaiah was on the team, then to me, you could have gotten rid of Christian Laettner and made room for Isaiah. And nobody would have said a word. Nobody would have said a word. Nobody.
Probably not.
So,
yeah, probably.
So my thing is, I agree with what you're saying, Jerry. I would never sit here and say to you that, you know, he's a great guy and he's this nice guy and perfect. No. When you're a kid from the inner city of Chicago, what do you expect? When you're a kid from certain places and certain areas, and I mean, Professor can probably expound to this. Certain people come from certain areas. They're going to have certain attitudes, certain way they were brought up. So I don't fault Isaiah for that, and I don't say he's a perfect model citizen. No. Is he a brat? Sure. But most NBA guys are. They're spoiled. They're pampered. But has he done some things wrong? Absolutely. Was walking off the floor wrong for what he did to Jordan and them? Absolutely. It was poor sportsmanship. I tell anybody that. But as I said the other night when people were on Facebook criticizing KG and Rondo, I said, go put a mic or go do something and go ask a guy a question about a guy you just got through competing for 7 games and you don't like him in the heat right after you come off the floor and ask him questions about that other team and see what he says. 9 times out of 10, he ain't got too much to say good about that person. Now, when you get them later, after they cooled off, taking a shower, put their clothes on at the press conference, that's different. But you catch a guy like that at that time, people are going to be emotional. It's a game. It's an emotional game. It's not all just fun and games. As a former person who's played, I didn't always like the guys who did it. So, you know. Anyway, but you're right. I agree with you on what you said, Jerry. You know, he hasn't been the best person. You know, he's done some things wrong. But I still say one of the 50 greatest, he should have been on
that
team.
Well, there's no doubt. It would be hard to push. Well, I wouldn't say hard, but at that particular time, because of the players they had on the team, and the one thing that the Olympic Committee wanted to have was an amateur player. He was, for lack of a better word, the odd man out. For more than one reason, and I didn't say the reasons were right, but it was for more than one reason. So,
but just one correction: he was not the odd man out, because for Michael Jordan to say for somebody to come to Michael Jordan and say we want you on the team, and he to come back and say I'll be on the team if he's not a part of it, that lets me know he was considered to be on that team. That's what I'm trying to say. There wasn't no question. He was going to be part of it. Somebody else was going to be the odd man out, but it wasn't going to be Isaiah. But for Michael Jordan to say that and Scottie Pippen to say that, to me, that means he was being considered. Because if he was just a guy who was just the odd man out, he would have never made that request. So, you know, I just think he wasn't the odd man out. He was put out.
I'm surprised that both those players had that much power, because some of those guys, when they got together, didn't like each other. Just for the sheer fact of competing against each other. And forged friendships because they competed with each other in the Olympics. I'm surprised that a player, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, would carry that much weight in the Olympics. When I mean, you got a Hall of Fame, 11 Hall of Famers in, on that team. So,
right. So
it is what it is. Like, you know, you can't go back in the hands of time and change it. So,
exactly.
It's unfortunate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, my next order of business is the boxing. What happened on Saturday night? I don't really have too much to say about that, except to say that I did read an article today that Timothy Bradley quoted, and I quote, you know, he wasn't the one to blame about it, but I do want you to read one interesting quote from here for, and then hear from both of you. On the story that Bradley told Bob Arum he thought he lost the fight, he says, and I quote, "That is crazy. That is not accurate. That is a complete lie. I told him I did my best, and I said I have injuries and did my best. That was it. I never said that I lost the fight or I couldn't beat this guy. I never said that. I thought I was in the mix the whole time. My face is clear, no big lumps or bruises on my face, and I'm telling you, I gave this guy hell." Now, I said after this fight that the decision and everything else was part of Bob Arum, and I still believe that. I mean, to make something like that, that's just crazy. You know, I haven't seen the fight, but from the clips I saw and from the outrage, I know he didn't beat this guy. I mean, not literally, but, you know, I'll let you guys expound on it. So,
well, Professor, I'm going to ask you, this is JT, the co-host with Mac. I'm going to ask you, if you watch this fight, or you watched the replay of this fight, because it's been over a week, and I'm pretty sure it's been on HBO and people have watched the replay. I'm going to ask you if you've watched the fight, and if you watched the fight, what's your opinion of what you saw?
Yeah, actually, like Mac, I did not see the fight. I did not see it. But I kind of have the same similar look as Mac does. If it was, you know, if it was going to be a huge controversy if dude won, I don't understand. If it was so close, it seemed like there had to be some shadiness to it, because why wouldn't they have said it was a draw? Or,
yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I just, if it was going to be a big controversy and it was so close, I don't see why it wasn't a draw instead of Bradley getting the victory over. So that's what had me confused. And I did not catch the fight. I saw highlights and had a lot of people in the uproar, but I don't know what to think of it, because I actually didn't see the fight, but that's
the
result.
Well, we will see it. Well, we will see it tomorrow on HBO, because you know they usually put it on HBO tomorrow, probably around 9 or 10 o'clock. So I'm gonna watch it then, and then I'll post what I think on Facebook and let them know, you know, what I saw. But I'm pretty sure, you know, millions of people can't be wrong. Something will change.
So, well, yeah. You two haven't watched the fight. I watched the fight, and in my opinion, and I'm no expert in watching fights, but I've watched several fights. 58 years old, and I've been watching fights for a long time. In my opinion, he may have won 2 to 3 rounds. I'm talking about Bradley. May have won 2 to 3 rounds. That's how lopsided this fight was.
Mm-hmm.
That's how crazy this decision was.
Mm-hmm.
That absolutely, even though it was close scoring, which I definitely didn't see,
mm-hmm.
Let me tell you this, plus 82 in power punches, that's what Pacquiao had over Bradley. Plus
that's what they 80,
82 in power punches, and I can believe that because I watched it for myself, and how it was judged, the way it was judged, was an absolute abomination, and the fix had to be in. And it's obvious. It's obvious. And from what I understand, from one of my associates on another show, the Irish bookies gave their money back of the bettors who had bet on the fight and lost. They refunded their money to those bettors because of the look
that's pretty bad.
How bad the fight was. Now, we do have a caller on the line, Black Mac. Do you want to bring him in or what?
Yeah, that's fine. Bring them in and see what they want to sound off about.
Okay. Caller from the 703, welcome to the No Chaser Show with the host, Mac Williams, and his special guest, the professor. State your name and what you got to say.
Hey, Mac, this is Lil C from out the VA, champ. How you?
What's up, C?
Man,
how
you know
been,
I'm gonna support you, man. Hey, I really only want to say I'm a LeBron fan. I respect his game. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he'll ever finish until he wants to get to the line at the end of the game. He can run over dudes all game, full speed, like a fullback. But you never see him do that in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's him just avoiding the foul line.
Yeah,
if he gets that hard,
true.
He won't be a closer to me. That's just personal.
I got you.
One more thing, though. KD all day. He's repping us.
All right. I got you, Z. I
respect,
got you, baby.
Do
thank
what
you.
Y'all do. Much respect. Professor, respect to you, champ.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
All right. Bless
thanks
up, man.
It.
All right, Z. All right. Thanks, man.
My man.
All right, Mac. We got another caller. You want to bring him
all
in?
All right. Bring him in. Bring him in. Let him call in.
Okay. Caller from the 252, welcome to the No Chaser Show. State your name and tell us what you got to say.
Hey, Matt. It's Nene.
Matt!
What's up, Nene? I didn't even know you were going to call in on the show. Oh,
and
wow.
And Crystal. Don't forget
about
me.
It's her and Crystal. Oh, it's you and Crystal.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
yes.
Well, let me explain to the audience who these guys are. Two crazy girls I hired when I was managing at Pizza Hut, and they came in, one out of high school, one still in high school, and they became two of my best managers and probably two of the craziest employees I've ever hired in my life. But I love them. I love them because they have turned into beautiful young women with kids and family, and I love them very much, just like daughters, man. So say whatever y'all gonna say and get off, cause y'all crazy and I don't know what's gonna fly out y'all mouth. So.
We just wanted to show support.
Thank you, I appreciate it. This is every Friday, so y'all welcome to listen.
Congratulations on your show.
Thank you, I appreciate it, Crystal. Crystal decided to stalk me to meet KD the other night, so I told her I would show him her picture. So
seriously,
Yeah.
Seriously,
Max.
Okay,
we're gonna end with that. Bye.
Yeah, we're gonna end with that. Goodbye. I'll see y'all later. Love y'all. Talk to y'all later. Lord have mercy. I hear you, friends. I got crazy friends. Fast, don't judge me, man. Don't judge me.
I got crazy friends too. Don't even worry.
Oh yeah,
about
I know. You probably sitting over there biting your nails, like now, like damn. I hope they don't call in.
Okay. Well,
no.
Mac,
I love
Mac,
them girls, man.
Mac,
yeah.
We have another caller from the 301. You want to bring him in?
Bring him in.
All right. Caller from the 301, welcome to the No Chaser Show with Mac and Jerry and our special guest, Professor. He hung up.
Okay. Oh, he hung up? Okay.
Yeah, they hung
well,
up.
Well, anyway, let me get on to this other stuff. We talked enough about that. Let's talk about Professor, because one of the things I like to do is I like to bring on special guests and people that I feel that are really doing something. And I'm going to tell you fast, one of the things that I've always been amazed about you, the number one thing I've probably always been amazed about is that, you know, I want you, I've seen what you did, and everybody knows your history. You did the and-one thing, got the contest and won. I used to watch it like every freaking week. I just like didn't want to miss
mm-hmm.
it. And when you
mm-hmm.
finally won it, the thing I respect about you so much, and I want you to explain to most people, because we probably got a lot of people on here who either play ball, have an aspiration to play ball one day or what have you. Can you tell us what is your regimen? Like, what did it really take to become just Grayson Boucher, who tried out, you know, for the show, to becoming what you are today? I just want to know what that all took as far as the hard work and, you know, what is a regimen for you? You know, what do you usually do?
Yeah. Well, I guess growing up, it was different from what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, you know, you got the luxury of time, you know, as a kid with less responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
I basically spent all day in the gym, you know, literally, I don't know, maybe a minimum of 2 hours a day anywhere to,
wow.
you know, 6-7 hours. I kind of like just hung out there all day, you know. So I'd play some ball, go get some food, come back, play some 2-on-2, go eat, come back, play 5-on-5, you know, kind of lived in the gym. But also, I think it's a big effort to just spending a lot of time in the gym alone by myself,
mm-hmm.
Doing skill training, like just solo, just me, the basketball, and the hoop.
Wow.
And just getting in tons and tons of repetitions of any type of move I wanted to learn, any type of, you know, just shooting thousands and thousands of jumpers over and over. I think that's what it's most in a testament to,
mm-hmm.
growing up, just being a gym rat and loving the game. So none of the mm-hmm. work seemed to be hard work. It was just, I loved it, so it's just like my recreation. And then
okay.
Once I got on, I think the skill set finally had paid off that I had developed. And then once I got on, I think just continuing to stay focused despite, you know, a lot of time when you receive, like, fame or notoriety, people get caught up in all the things that you should refrain from to stay focused, you know, whether it be partying,
mm-hmm.
whether it's women,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, alcohol, whatever people, you know, tend to latch on to. So
mm-hmm.
distractions, what I'm trying to say is distractions are heavy. So
okay.
I guess I did a decent job, and not a perfect job, that's for sure, but I did a decent job of refraining from those distractions and always making sure that I got my workouts in. So I still continue to play a lot of basketball after that, and I still
mm-hmm.
do today.
I know.
I'll probably run pick up 3 to 4 times. You know, I'd say anywhere between two to four times a week, and then, you know, make sure that I leave, you know, a couple hours out of the day just to do skill training stuff just by myself.
So you don't have a trainer?
I do not have a trainer, no.
Wow. So where did you learn?
Wow.
So that's another great question. Where did you learn the skill set stuff? I mean, people don't just make
okay.
up. I'm saying, where did you get that from?
Right. Okay. I don't have a trainer today, but when I was in fifth grade, a lot of people don't know this, but when I was in fifth grade, I had a guy who was he had played Division I basketball at Oregon State University. His name was Rodney Howard. I think he played there when Gary Payton played there. But anyway, he's a good friend of mine. He actually taught me a lot of these elite level of ball handling stuff when I was in fifth grade. So I remember he taught me, like, in and out. He taught me to cross over. He taught me how to hesitate.
Wow.
All this high level ball handling stuff. That actually, he was way ahead of his time, and he was teaching it to me when I was in fifth grade, and none of, you know,
wow.
my other peers or players from the area were learning this kind of ball handling techniques, which are taught everywhere nowadays. Now it's like, you know, now it's out there. But I was taught it in fifth grade, so people were always amazed that I had, like, this quick crossover and always throwing no-look passes and doing all this stuff. But it was because this trainer, this guy, had shown me this at such a young age. So
okay.
that I can attest that to being a huge part of it. And then from there, of course, I love the game. So whatever he would teach me, I would just take it to the gym and just put in
thousand
reps.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, any questions from you, Jerry?
Yeah. I definitely have this. All the way from Kaiser, Oregon, where you were raised, to compete on the N1 against, in my opinion, insurmountable odds, because you weren't the favorite to win on that because of because the brothers on the team had to give you a hard time because of who you are. If you understand what I'm saying, you walking on the court like, who is this guy compared to guys that look alike? Tell me, what kind of how did you stay focused knowing you had, in my opinion, insurmountable odds to be able to get where you got? Hello?
Professor?
Yeah.
You still there? Oh, he's breaking up. You breaking up.
You're breaking up.
Oh, okay. Let me try.
We got you now. Go ahead.
All right. Sorry.
Did you hear the question?
Yeah. No, I heard the full question, man.
Okay.
I think I just stayed focused because what many people didn't know is that was a national contest to find the next street ball legend or to find a new member to be on N1, right?
Right.
But I was happy. I was just content with getting picked up from the game in my city, and that was the first step. So I always tell people, if I would have just made the game when they came to Portland, Oregon, and played against the N1 guys and went home that night, and it would have ended right there, I would have been satisfied.
Wow.
Because I was a fan of this stuff. So the fact that they took me on the road, it was really just all fun to me. I really wasn't looking at it like I need to win a contract. I was looking at it like, okay, it's a cool experience, and now I'm going to go back to school. So I think just having fun and not letting the stuff get to me, you know? Like, I was enjoying the experience. I thought it was so fun, so cool. And then all of a sudden, I found myself in contention for the contract, which I never could have anticipated, you know?
Right.
I think that helped me avoid the pitfalls of getting frustrated, which I could have done, or, you know, getting upset with guys.
You really didn't have pressure.
Yeah, I didn't feel pressure. Other guys, now looking back, when I watched that DVD, I'm always like, dang, these guys are really, you know, this was life or death. They're trying to get a job. I was really looking at it like, man, this is so fun. Like, I'm blessed to be out here, you know, like a little kid. You know, I was 17, so.
And that impresses me, because I think a lot of players need to do that and just enjoy the moment. And that's the one thing I think that I've gotten out of life more than anything, is just enjoy the moment as long as it is, and as long as you can enjoy it, enjoy it. When it's over, thank God for it and keep moving. But I think the problem is a lot of guys now in basketball take this and want to make it a job, or want to make money out of it, or want to do something. But I think a lot of guys don't understand there are more than one ways to skin a cat and make money, and still do what you like or do what you love to do. Because there are people who are just gym rats who go to work every day, but they have the money and they make good money, and they come in and they still come in the gym. Pretty sure you play with some pretty rich guys who can play, and they just love what they do. But I think the problem is our players just look at it as NBA or bust, overseas or bust. But I've seen a lot of guys who have done stuff that do no more than just start camps and make money during the summer and make enough to live on and then go get a small job or whatever. I think if we take the pressure out of it and say, just have fun with it. Just enjoy it. Learn it. If you're serious about it, get serious about it. But realize when it runs out, when it's done, okay, so what? God got another plan. He got another plan. And that leads me to my next question.
Just to add on to that, you're so right. It was God's plan, because I didn't even have that knowledge, what you just said. Like, I didn't even know that. I just happened to be such, like, a kid at mind that it was just fun, you know? So, you're definitely right on that, man.
Yeah. Right. And the thing I wanted to, the next question I had, unless Jerry has a question he wants to get
no,
in.
Go ahead.
The next question I had was, you've made a living from this. How did you go from just getting a contract? Because obviously, and one ended at some point in time, and that stopped. But I've noticed that over your years, you've always kept something going. You're always making money at this. How is it that you're still making money doing it, and you're actually making a living off that? You're not working a so-called, quote-unquote, 9-to-5. And I want people to understand, how did you do this? Did you do it through, okay, I got this relationship, made relationships through who I play with and just networked, and then I just did my thing? Or did you have an agent? I mean, just how did all this come about? Because I'm amazed that for all these years, not only the longevity on basketball, but you're living off this. And I want people to hear how you can do this, and you're not in the NBA and you're not overseas. So you can expound on that.
Right. Well, When we were on M1, we had a contract every year, and it would go for 2 years. So I was kind of just under the M1 umbrella. We were exclusive, so any M1 events would go on. I was lucky to re-sign every year. And I think how I was able to do that was I showed up to everything on time. I wasn't a headache off the court. Always came to camp into shape.
Thank you.
And then continued to perform. So when it came back, when it came to re-signing time, a lot of time guys just wouldn't get re-signed. Like, they wouldn't even give them. They were kind of cutthroat. They wouldn't even give the guy a call. He wasn't going to get re-signed. So I think what ball players often overlook, if I could give any advice, is that the off-court component, you can perform and you can stay in shape, but kind of like, I guess, how you carry yourself, and are you going to show up on time? Are you going to be a professional? Are you going to be in shape? All those things be into it, too, just as much. So I think when it came time to resign, every time I was at a check, you know, check those off the list. So.
And you were always – and it seemed to me that you took this as more than just a paycheck. You took this as a profession. You were a professional
yes.
at what you did, which meant you didn't know anything about black people's time being late.
Yeah.
And you didn't know anything about, you know, hey, this is the No Chaser show. I just say it. You didn't know nothing about black folks' time. You were on time. You didn't know.
Right.
You didn't go home and eat chitlins and cornbread and laze around for a while, and then 2 months before say, okay, now I'm going to go ahead and do that. And I think that's
right.
important to point out to those who are listening, to basketball players and those who are listening, is that this is a profession. And I see so many guys, even now, you know, whether it's overseas, whether it's street bump, whatever, I think it goes deeper than that. I think it goes to reputation, even with other players.
Yep.
Because what I think a lot of players forget is, just because me and you boys, Professor, doesn't mean that when it comes down to a big event, and Professor, you in this event, and a guy comes to you and says, who you looking to be on this event? Well, you're not going to pick a guy that's coming late, that's a headache off the court. Now, you may not say it out
right.
loud. Those people may cut him loose. But what everybody watches everybody. And your reputation is what you have when you don't know somebody. If
yeah.
I know somebody and he don't know you, Grayson, and hasn't seen you do your thing, well, guess what I'm going to say? Well, as a professor, you know, can Professor come down here and do an event? You know, we're willing to pay, you know, $3,000 and da-da-da-da-da. Okay, yeah, no problem. You know why? Because I know Professor's going to come down and be in shape. He ain't going to be in the hotel smoking weed and drinking. He's not going to come
right.
in out of shape, and he's not going to be a headache to anybody, and he's going to show up on time. That's
right.
for sure money. I'm going to pick you before I pick a guy who's going to be a headache. So I just think it's not only just the habits, like you said, but I think it's also everybody. You never know who's watching. You never know who's looking at you and saying, you know, and watching what you do when you're not in front of the audience, in front of other people. So I'm
right.
glad you said those things.
Mm-hmm.
As far
and
as endorsement, did that help with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you make a good point, man. You make a perfect point. Just being a guy that other guys can co-sign for, you know, it goes a long way. Like you say, you never know who's watching, never know what opportunity will come up, so. Just staying ready so you don't have to get ready. You're dead on with that.
Exactly.
And Mac, we have another caller. You want to bring him in?
Sure, no problem.
Caller from 240, welcome to the No Chaser Show with Mac and Jerry and our special guest, the Professor. State your name and tell us what you got to say.
See, I ain't even press one, Slim. I was just trying to take in this Chaser joint. Trying to lurk in the back or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I spring out and, you know, hit Mac like the assassin type dude that I am. Just waiting for him to slip up and say something wrong. But peace and blessings.
Oh,
what's up, everybody? My name is Cal.
What's up, babe?
Ain't much, man. Leave
work. You got a question,
out.
Or you wanna holler at Professor? You got a question or anything you wanna say?
I'm just sitting back and listening for right now. I'm on my way
okay.
home.
Okay.
On that good DC Metro, Slim.
Okay. All right. I know about that good DC Metro on Friday. All right, man. Well, look, I thank you for calling in, man. Please be a supportive listener, man. Anytime, man. We always gonna try to get some good guests on certain weeks, but. You know, if you, on your way home, man, I really appreciate the love, man, and calling in. I really appreciate that, brother.
No doubt.
All right, brother. I will talk to you later, man. Thanks for calling, man. Much love, man.
All right.
Well, Tess, the last one question I have is, when you got the endorsements and things like the apps and all that stuff, did that come from relationships also, from making good relationships? Did that just come to you, or was that something you seeked out?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a relationship thing. I had actually shot two instructional videos with the people who did that back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was put in touch with them originally by a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had parted ways with that manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I had kept a good relationship with the people. And so
mm-hmm.
They had reached out about another opportunity, and then they were, I'm not going to mention no names, but they were happy that I had separated from the manager.
Right.
And so they wanted to continue business, and they were actually happier to do it. So So yeah, it was definitely from a relationship thing and just not burning any bridges and just, you know, keeping cool.
Right. So like the apps and all the stuff that you keep coming up with and the shows and stuff like that, are you still managed by somebody now, or is this something you kind of do to on your own?
You know what? I actually do everything on my own, man. I've had a few managers in the past, and I had some bad experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And if I found the right fit, I would have a manager today.
Mm-hmm.
But most people didn't. Not saying they didn't operate how I'd like them to operate, but they weren't good at carrying relationships. So, and then I had a couple of NBA managers, type guys that managed some NBA players. But if you're not in the league and you're not bringing them that NBA type dollar, then you kind of get shifted towards the bottom of the totem pole, and so it was
right.
It was hard to operate that way. So, if I found the right fit, I would rock with it. But for now, I do everything on my own.
Right. Okay, well, you know better. I mean, by now you should know better than anybody, you know, what you want in your career and your opportunities and things like that. So I think once you get to this kind of point, it's not like you some, you know, it's not like you some little guy just getting into it and don't know nothing. So, I mean, I think, you know, with the experiences come, you know, comes knowledge, and I don't think, you know, I think you can do it on your own. Jerry, did you have any questions for Fest?
Well, speaking of that, I heard that the professor's gone Hollywood. You've done some shows. You've done some movies. Tell me about those.
Yeah, I actually moved out here to L.A. like in 2007 because I had wanted to get into acting and stuff.
Right.
I was given a script in 2004 to be the lead in this basketball movie. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't know if it would ever happen, but because I got the script in 2004. And didn't end up shooting until 2007, but it went down. And in the meantime, I had taken acting classes just to prepare myself in case it did. So when it happened, it was a great experience. I thought it was something cool at the time, and it was something I wanted to dig into further. I actually have been acting the past few years, and I wouldn't mind expanding on it, but that
mm-hmm.
business is kind of tough, and basketball pays my bills, you know, year-round, so I'm forced to have, you know, hoops be my main thing, you know, 90% of
mm-hmm.
the year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did a couple of guest appearances on the TV shows. I filmed
mm-hmm.
that movie that I was leading. It's still supposed to come out at some point. No saying when, but
okay.
Man, it's been a cool experience. But I found out a lot about the business and just, like, how hard it is to actually, you know, survive, you know, just acting and
mm-hmm.
and leveraging your way through that business. So it's been cool.
So what do you think you'll do when you stop doing hoops? What do you think, what are your business opportunities or things that you're going to? Would you stay in California and, you know, work harder on the craft and do that and just do something else, you know, while you're waiting on that acting thing to come? Or have you just given up and said, nah, I'm not really going to go into that unless somebody just drags me in or pulls me in? Or, you know, what are your plans for as far as the future? Like, what are your aspirations to do now and in the future?
Right. No, I actually left all the doors open, man. Currently I do, like, skill training. I do ball handling clinics all over the world. I've been doing that for, like, 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
So I love doing that. I still do the acting thing.
Okay.
I like doing that. Still doing street ball. I still do, like, personal branding stuff.
Okay.
And also, aside from that, I've been asked to, like, train NBA guys and work for, like, some affiliates with Nike approached me to, like, train people. But
mm-hmm.
I didn't do it because I tour so much. So I basically leave all the doors open, and I'm just trying to take it one day at a time. But my plan would be, and, you know, things never go quite according to plan, but my plan would be play ball for as long as, you know, Lord willing, I stay healthy, you know, as long as I can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I would like to do some sort of skill training or do something outreach-based with basketball, whether it's clinics, whether it's appearances, whether it's giving a testimony or
mm-hmm.
whatever that may lead to. So that's the plan,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just seeing how it plays out.
Okay.
And Mac, so, Mac, we have mm-hmm. we have another call if you want to bring him in.
Sure, bring him in.
Okay. Caller from the 301. Welcome to the Chaser Show, No Chaser, I should say, with Mac and Jerry and our special guest, the professor. State your name and tell us what you got. They hung up.
Okay.
They hung
That's
up.
Okay. That's okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, what I wanted to say, well, the last thing I really wanted to talk to you about and ask you is, when I first met you, you know, I still got you on the email list, and I used to send these, but a lot of people don't know this, but Press knows that I used to send every day. I used to send devotionals out. I got a list of people. I actually just started back doing it. Because God got me back on it. But
I noticed. I got yours the other day. Yeah.
I got back. Yeah, that's why I put it back. And I said I'm back at it. You know. So, but what I wanted to know is, Beth, how did you? Can you give us sort of like your testimony? Like, how did you go from where you were to where you are now, as far as you know, being a Christian or what have you? What? How did that kind of go? If you can expound on that.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. It actually started when I was real young. My parents had put me in Christian schools, in preschool.
Mm-hmm.
So I was exposed to the word at a very young age, Christian preschool. And then I didn't hear about the word of God until I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
Other than, you know, what you would hear just normally on a day-to-day.
I didn't
hear about it, wasn't taught it until I was a senior in high school. I actually had this is how I know it was God's plan. I actually had transferred my junior year, just for my senior year, I transferred to a small Christian school, and I only did it, sadly, I only did it for basketball at the time. So I had transferred. My parents are like agnostic. They don't follow.
Wow.
But they put me in those Christian schools because they felt like, They kind of feel like the faith is like, they feel like it's a good practice, you know, a good way to live. They don't look at Jesus Christ as the truth.
Okay.
So, basically, I was exposed to that as a senior in high school, and then I got on tour shortly after that. I went to JUCO for 1 year, and then I got on tour shortly after that. And so, that word was kind of like it was in me, and I had gone through tour, and you know, like I spoke on a little bit before this, you experience a lot of things, you know, when you get fame, notoriety and stuff, so
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess I was kind of like chasing fulfillment, you know. I thought, like, if you made it as a basketball player, you get paid to play, and you looked at it as a basketball star, that would, you know, fully fulfill you, right? That's mm-hmm. what we tend to think. So after a while, nothing was fulfilling, you know. I had reached my goals. You know, I tried to seek it through somewhat of, when I went astray a little bit, I was partying a little bit, doing mm-hmm. things I shouldn't have been a part of.
Right.
Everything didn't fulfill me. And then I started hearing about the Word of God a little bit through Escalade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my man. He used to send me them devotionals, his devotionals too.
Right. So I had got those for a couple of years, and then that was like, you know, so it always was like in the back of my mind. It was looming, you know?
Right.
Always looming. And I remember I got saved just 2 years ago because I just got to a point where I was just feeling empty and I was just needing to, I just started searching, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you start asking questions, you know, as a man, like, why am I here? What's my purpose?
Exactly.
And just started searching, and it's the Word of God has been rooted in me since I was young. I kind of went back to that and looked at all type of stuff. Like, I was looking into other religions and just, you know, mm-hmm. just seeing. Mm-hmm. So then, actually, I was saved in 2010, and then 2011, shortly after Escalade passed, I was actually baptized.
Wow. Congratulations, brother.
Thank you, man. Actually, Escalade actually told me, we were talking about baptism like a couple of days before he passed away.
Wow.
It was crazy. Yeah, I remember he called me at like 4 in the morning. S would always be up all night. Sometimes
yeah, I know.
Oh, he's out of the blue. So one time he called me at 4 in the morning, and I don't even know why I was awake, but he was just like, what's going on? Something. And then all we talked about was like the Word of God for like 2 hours.
Wow.
Or an hour, something like that.
Wow.
And then we were talking about the importance of baptism, talking about how Mark was a preacher now, how he lived his life, you know, all this stuff.
Right.
And then a week later he came out here for All-Star Weekend out here in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away. I went to the funeral. I heard Mark preach for the first time.
Wow.
Super super powerful. Mark, incredible preacher.
Right.
And, you know, I was asking them some questions. But then, you know, I just decided it to be sold out, you know, like I should have done earlier.
That's okay,
but
man. It don't matter.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to hit pitfalls to, in order to humble yourself all the way,
well,
in order to do things right. And so that
absolutely.
Kind of brought I went through at that time.
That's
and
great, man. Well, you know, God's timing is always perfect. Even though we, in the world's time, we think it's, I should have did it a long time ago. But God says, no, you right on time. I already
right.
know what you was going to do. So you right on time. So I
right.
understand that.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I just really, you know, I want to congratulate you, man, because it's a great, people think that, you know, when you get saved, you don't have no fun. And I keep trying to tell them.
Right.
I say, I don't know who told you that. That's a lie. I said, because
yeah,
I have plenty of fun. You know.
Exactly. Yeah, not
and,
true at all, man.
Not true at all. Exactly. But it can't be halfway. You can't be halfway because you just can't be as
right.
blessed if you don't do it all the way and obey it all the way.
Right.
So with that being said, you know, I want to know if – my bad, Jerry. I want to know if you have any questions, any final questions, or any final things you want to say.
No, I'm cool.
Okay. Well, you know, Fess, I really appreciate it. I'm going to let you go on this last question. Who do you have winning – the NBA finals, or who are you rooting for to win it?
Yeah, I figured that would come up. You know what? I really just want to see a dope series. I think we're looking at the two best players in the world.
Absolutely.
And LeBron and KD. So
absolutely.
I think it's kind of like a classic. Like we get to sit back and enjoy. I got no attachment to the Heat, nor you know OKC. I'm from Oregon, so unfortunately I'm a Blazer fan.
That's
but,
not a bad thing though. Blazers ain't
no,
wrong. They're very talented
just
team.
Saying,
they just need the right
yeah.
hit.
I'm just saying right now. Yeah, exactly. So no, I just want to see a great series. I wouldn't mind seeing KD get it. I love how KD's like real humble and
yes,
you know, how much they shows big heart and closes out
exactly.
games. And
exactly.
then with LeBron, it's like I kind of feel bad for dude a little bit because there's so much backlash. You know what I mean? He's under the microscope.
But he brought
you
all that
mean?
On himself though.
He brought a lot of it on himself. You know, he had a Chosen One tattoo. He's
yeah.
King James,
yeah.
self-proclaimed.
Yeah.
I already know.
Yes.
I know. But
yeah. Yeah.
I do feel like, you know, he was a kid, though, you know, when he
right.
brought all that on himself and he didn't know
exactly.
what he was doing.
Yep.
So, kind of
I've always said
I wouldn't
have went
to, mind. You know.
I think the biggest mistake he made was not going to college.
Agree.
Because I think if he had went to college, I think he wouldn't be scrutinized. I think he would have got some kind of grounding, and I think he would have made better decisions. And I also think that he would have been more, quote-unquote, clutch or more learned how to do that through failing on another level. So I think he would
I think
be more
so too.
Ready, and his curve wouldn't be so long if he had
yep.
done that. So for that, you know, I'll say that to him. And, you know, just to say it on here on the air, you know, I don't hate LeBron. You know, a lot of people say I hate LeBron because I say he's not clutch, he's not this or that. But, you know, I grew up a little different. You came up, when you were born, I was graduating high school. So
yeah.
I've seen much more basketball. When I grew up, I saw clutch players. And I know what they did
right.
and how they did it. Jerry can attest
right.
to the same thing. So we're from a different generation. So our scrutiny is not hate. It's just we just want to say, look, you know, all our players, we don't give anything until you do something. So
mm-hmm.
if you ain't
right.
doing it, we ain't going to just give it to you for free. Because we grew
right.
up watching people who did it every Sunday, every Monday, every Tuesday. Every time you see them and they were in a bad situation, they were pulling it out. And for us, I just hold him high in scrutiny because, to me, I just think this generation gives too much to people too soon and they don't
they do.
Earn it.
I agree with you, man. You know, I'm not the super new generation. I'm 28 now, so I'm not too young.
No, I got you. But when I say that, I mean the fans
yeah.
that are in their that are younger than you, or in
yeah.
their teens, or
they
even at your age, and even at your age, they don't know anything about hard work and about you got to earn it. You just can't be given it just because you're 6'8", 250 pounds. You can't, just because you're a specimen don't mean you're going to get everything, because if that were the case, every great player would have a, you know, would have a championship. But the great ones, all of them don't, you know.
I agree, man. Yeah, growing
you know,
up watching Mike and seeing his mentality and the close of the games and Magic and
right.
seeing all those guys.
Right.
Okay, I agree, man. It's totally different. Like LeBron is, you know, he's pass happy. the closing second, which doesn't make any sense. So I agree.
Like I told everybody the other day, until last night I gave him credit. I said, you know what, he hit two clutch free throws, he did what he did. But that brings me to my next point that I always have said, and I've told Jerry this, and we're running out of time, but I'm going to make it quick. But what it is like I said, one game don't make you clutch. You got to do it consistently and all the time to change your reputation and to become a clutch player. But the other thing I also said is, yeah, last night he was clutch. But I've always said, and this has remained true, is that when they're up, he's confident. He's more confident. He takes those shots. When the win is in doubt, is when he fails. And
it gets funny.
Exactly. And the thing about it is, the other night, like I told him, I said, "Don't come to me." I told people, "Don't come to me on Facebook talking about he was clutch, wasn't he? So he's clutch, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, he was clutch that night." I said, "But remember the game before." He had 7 points in the fourth quarter when KD had 17 and was closing the bar and shutting the lights off. It was a shutdown.
Right, yeah.
So for me, I'm like, it's got to be all the time. You can't. Everybody's going to miss shots and not going to always do it, but in order to change your reputation, KD has a reputation because over time we know what he's going to do. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
With him, it's always a doubt, and he just needs to do it more consistently in order to change the outlook. So that's what I'm
closing
on that.
I agree, man. Yeah, and even last night, he got a little pass happy before he hit that shot.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, I always look at it like why wouldn't he enjoy those closing moments? You know, I believe KD enjoys them. Like Mike.
Yeah,
right.
You embrace it. You want it.
Like, why?
You know?
Yeah, so I don't know if he will be, man, because if you don't enjoy him and you're having to, like, make the decision, okay, I got to close, it's a little different. Like, you should be looking forward to it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure, brother. I just want to say
thank you
and I appreciate it. I'm sorry you missed. You didn't listen to my show when I had David Aldridge on, did you?
I didn't hear it, man. I wish I would have caught it.
Yeah, I got to get you to come back on the next time he comes. I'm going to try to get him on probably after the draft, to grade the draft or what have you. But, we're going to definitely – I definitely want you to come back. And I definitely want you to come back I know you don't watch football, so I definitely can't have you back during football season because I found out for you didn't watch football, I was like, what the hell? I was like, how do you not watch football, Fett? Like, what do you
mean? I'm one of those crazy people, man.
Yeah, man. So I'm like, what do? You just missed the whole NFL, so we talk to you when college basketball starts.
All right. Hey, I'm down anytime, man. Anytime.
I'm going to definitely call you during – before the summer's back over, we'll keep, we always keep in touch. But I'm going to definitely have you back on. If I can't get David, I'm going to definitely get you back on what you think about the draft or what have you. And we just really appreciate you, man. And I thank you for being a friend of the show and being my friend. And, I really appreciate you, man, as a brother in Christ and as a person, man. I really respect your game and respect your hard work. And every time I look at you, man, I just think about, man, look where he came from and look where he's come so far. And, looking at you, I know there is a God. There is a God. Like I said, to think that one white boy, and you know I don't mean this in that way, one white boy can play at Berry Farms, play in New York, shut down the Mecca in Madison Square Garden, play in the roughest places with the toughest dudes and handle it, dude, you have a black card in every neighborhood in America. Trust me. You are my idol. I'm serious because, trust me, man, I look at them all the time. I'll be like, y'all can talk all you want about white boys can't jump, can't play. I got one that play anywhere, anytime, and don't have no problem with it. That's a big accomplishment, bro. Trust me, big accomplishment.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, Mac. I appreciate that, man. And thank you for having me on, man. It's a pleasure.
Hey, no problem, man. We're going to have you back on again. So Jerry, take us out of here. And, Fess, I'll talk to you later, brother. And I really appreciate you coming on, and I'm going to get you back on real soon, brother.
Okay, fellas. Thank you, man.
All right,
man.
Love you like a brother, man. Talk to you later.
All right, love you, bro.
All right, brother.
All right, Mac. We got less than a minute left in the show. Mm-hmm. If you want to say something before I take it back, take it out.
Nah, take me out. Take me out, man. Only thing I'll say is this show has been sponsored by Trinity Web Solutions, trinitywebsolutions.org. Please log on if you need websites, domains, anything. Log on. Other than that, I'm about to walk out the door with my co-host, and I'm going to let him take me out the door.
All right. I open the door for my man, Mac. He's walking out the door. Like I said, I'm Robin to his Batman. Till next week, same time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, same place. We'll be back here next week. Talk to you later. Enjoy the weekend, Mac. I will. We're out of here.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it.